Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. If you're listening via our new Radio Plus iPhone app, did you know that our hosts sometimes send charts they're talking about directly to the Radio Plus app? If you don't have the Radio Plus iPhone app yet, you'll want to download it. It's free via the iTunes App Store.
He is with Decision Economics, Alan Sinai. Good morning, sir.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very good. I look at the import price index. Not a big deal, but nevertheless, it signals disinflation and deflation. Does Chairman Bernanke have to worry about his lifelong study of the 1930s? Could we see deflation?
We are seeing disinflation in the world. Significant. It's going to push the central banks slowly, as always, to move to more quantitative easing and to cut rates more. We have disinflation in place. It's because the world economy is weak.
With that said, and this is a little esoteric, but it's Esoteric Thursday, let's go there, Alan. Do the central banks need to break the rule book, tear it up, rather, and start targeting nominal GDP, which is not happening?
That's longer run, Tom. That's a worthy alternative for them to deal with. If they were targeting that, they might be easing more. But the bottom line right now is, given for the U.S. Fed, where we are in the economy, the risk to the U.S. economy from the Eurozone and later on from the so-called fiscal cliff, the recession in place in Europe, which is getting worse, and the slowdown in Asia, that's making inflation come down below the Fed 2%. That's a target. They're at 1.5% year over year. They should be full force thinking about ways to stimulate more quantitative easing and break the rule books on how they're doing it. Not the way they've been doing it, but to do it differently.
How would they do it differently, Alan?
It's the size of the balance sheet. I think they have to explore. By the way, Ken is not going to do this. What I'm saying, I believe, is not where the Federal Reserve Fed think is at. What I'm saying is what I would argue is prescriptive, because they are behind the curve of the dynamics of the world slowdown, the recession in Europe. All the central banks are. They always are. And to break that and to get the markets to respond, which is a very important link to economy,
right,
get the markets to respond, they've got to do stuff fast that they haven't been doing. And that means a stronger increase in the balance sheet, the composition of securities. What the ECB did, which was to cut deposit rates to zero, maybe even go negative, radical things need to be thought about.
Dr. Sinai, you and Margot Thorning, writing in Forbes, you quote the economist John Fitzgerald Kennedy, and this is what President Kennedy said: there are risks and costs to a program of action, but they are far less than the long-range risks and costs of comfortable inaction. That defines Europe now. What would you like to see out of President Draghi?
Well, the European Central Bank quarter point cut was very timid a week or so ago. The language in terms of what else the ECB might do was very timid. The move to cut deposit rates to zero so that banks would not leave funds sitting idle at the central bank was a new and striking move that's good. They need to cut their policy rate another quarter, half a point. And for the ECB, quantitative easing is tricky because all the banks are not under their aegis, so that's a tricky kind of thing. But they need to increase the balance sheet and to step up and to say that they're going to buy whatever instruments the European Union sells on the funds that they have in the ESM to raise money to support the countries and banks that are in trouble. They're going to have to buy those securities, whatever they may turn out to be. They should say so.
Alan, David Rosenberg uses the phrase the new frugality, talking about how our listeners worldwide will respond to the milieu that you see through my data screen in front of me. This is not a pretty data screen. Do you just assume consumers will react by retrenching?
They're going to spend less and be more cautious, just as business is hesitating. We can see business hesitating on the trouble in Europe, and I think already on the so-called fiscal cliff. The business people aren't going to let loose the money, and banks are going to hesitate too. So we're likely to be disappointed in terms of the high-frequency data. I actually don't think ordinary people look at the data that David and I look at.
Right.
they really feel it out there in jobs and just kind of how it feels. And they don't feel good at all.
It's not
a real recovery.
I love how you say that, Alan. They don't feel good at all, and it folds right into small business, where we saw Bill Dunkelberg's survey really reverse this month. Can small business, whatever their politics, can they look to government to do something about the animal spirit, the nominal GDP of the economy?
Not the way we've been doing it. Not the way we've been doing it. Absolutely not.
Well, you know, we've heard about uncertainty for a long time now, Alan. At least some of it's been cleared up because the Supreme Court approved Obamacare. Whether you like it or not, at least now we know, or at least pretty much we know. The next hurdle would be the fiscal cliff at the end of the year. Is there something coming up before that?
We're in it now. It's the number one threat is what's going on in Europe. Very badly handled, but should we be surprised about policymakers being late and doing the wrong thing? I think that's kind of what happened.
So
the Eurozone is really declining. And the business, look, 85% of Europe we now think is in recession. That lump is bigger than China. China's the second largest economy in the world. That lump that I've just described, 85% of Europe in recession, more or less, and moving down more, we think, is bigger than the U.S. consumer economy, which is almost $11 trillion. It's so big now, and it grew out of this knit Greece 3.5 years ago. It's so big now that it really is the number one threat to business, and business is seeing it in their earnings and their business overseas. And I think in the employment data last Friday, I saw some hesitation. Probably, if I know CEOs, they're not going to put money out until Europe gets resolved. And then we've got the Washington stuff, which is insanity.
I want to point this out, Ken, because we try to mention when economists actually get things right. Happens a couple times a year. And that was a great insight by Alan to put the scope and scale on recession Europe versus the size of China. Months ago, he was younger, Alan Sinai stood off our Bloomberg TV set and told me exactly what's happened, that the European elites would become overcome by events, that they don't make the process, they don't make the rule, came out of Alan Sinai's mouth that they would be completely overcome. Alan, that's all happened in spades, hasn't it?
Well, I appreciate you saying that, Tom. I wish I could do something about it, but I can't. If I'm an investor, I can move money around.
Shouldn't they listen to their economic experts?
Well, there are a lot of economic experts. I think if you put yourself in the shoes of a policymaker and they listen to different things from different economists, sometimes they might listen to me, sometimes they might listen to others. They listen to this whole array of different views. How would you react? You would be a little confused. And then you've got your own politics to deal with. So it's not an easy game that the policymakers have to play.
I look at 170 German or Germanic economists signing a manifesto, as they put it, to Chancellor Merkel to get things going here. What is the prescription to assist Germany in their leadership out of this crisis?
I think it is the politics of getting enough funding that is believable into the backup ESM and then some sort of security like a Eurobond to be issued and then a kind of central bank support but from the fiscal side of the troubled countries in Europe. And that would be a step in the right direction.
And Paul DeGuire agrees with you at LSE. I mean, he's just saying, forget about all this acronym mumbo-jumbo, bundle it all together, everybody takes a haircut, and have the ECB back it out 30 years. I mean, that's the way the U.S. would do it, isn't it?
It's very new. That's why it's so hard to do, and much newer for Europe than it would be for our Federal Reserve, who have done, incredibly ingenious things. And look, our Fed, as I said, is way, way behind their curve, and I think they've got to step out and do some very innovative new things to get any attention and from both the financial and the business world. Otherwise, we'll just live through another slow period. The markets will price that. Ultimately, eventually, we'll have our election. We'll have a president. They'll go to work on the problems. We'll be over these uncertainties, but and then markets will move, and then the economy will do what it normally does. But right now, it's really hung up. It's really unfortunate.
Well, Alan, you know, it's generally agreed that Germany made the right move several years ago, basically by reforming its labor force, and look what happened. It went from the sick man of Europe to the strongest economy in Europe. What are the chances that other European countries will follow the German example?
Well, they might, but how long will that take? I think we could see the German politics eliminate Merkel in that time span, and we'd get another German leader, and that would put Germany on the road to leaving the Eurozone and setting up another core set of countries that would be simpatico with Germany. Ultimately, over the next year or two or three, if things don't get significantly better, that indeed may be what happens. We can't abstract from politics. I think you guys know that.
Right.
Economists sometimes abstract from politics. Policymakers try to do that if they're on the central bank side. You can't, because you get a political response to these kinds of crises, which gets into the dynamics, system dynamics of the crises, and then makes it more complicated and harder to deal with.
Alan, Dean Kernert was with us earlier today. He's from another world than Alan Sinai. Volatility, the VIX, the financial mathematics into the equity markets. He said the equity markets are a toggle switch. They're going to go one of two ways based on Alan Sinai's world, based on what economic thinkers and leaders do. What's the equity market going to do as you view it through your economic prism?
We are in a correction, and corrections, decent ones, are 15% from previous peaks. That's 1,200 to 1,225 on the S&P 500. We're fundamentally in a correction because of the Eurozone risks, which have gotten bigger to the world. And down the road, the fiscal cliff, which could easily be fixed from an uncertainty point of view if Congress and the administration would stop fighting with each other. So we will get through those uncertainties. We'll have an election. We'll have a new president. We'll have a different Congress. And markets do better once the uncertainties are resolved. So I think once we get through what we're living in now, what I'm talking about, and sound so gloomy about it, it's more shorter to run to intermediate term. The market should be better, and then better markets do help the economy. And then a better economy helps the markets. And all along, business people will be doing the things they have to do to make money. Consumers will be doing what they have to do to get money and to buy what they want to buy. And the private sector of the American business sector will, as I think it almost always has, get us out of our gloom and our now a downturn in growth, and we'll be up and running.
Alan Sinai, thank you so much. Extremely valuable with Decision Economics.
Listen to Bloomberg Surveillance weekday mornings at 7 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York, or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2012.